is learned this evening that just before the rapid sequence of events began yesterday in Vienna, which led to the appointment early this morning of Seyss Inquart to the Austrian Chancellorship, a special aeroplane arrived in Bonn from Berlin, carrying a personal letter from Herr Hitler to Signor Mussolini. Today at midday, Austrians and Germans tuned in on their radios to hear Minister Goebbels read a special proclamation by Herr Hitler to all German-speaking people, justifying his move in sending troops into Austria at the bid of Austria's new pro-Nazi premier, Dr. Seyss Inquart. In this proclamation, Herr Hitler, after having recapitulated in passionate terms the history of his attempt to induce the Austrian government, headed by Herr Schuschnigg, to adopt a more lenient attitude towards pro-Nazi Austrians, said, "I have finally decided to place at the disposal of the millions of Germans in Austria the help of the Reich. Since this morning, armed forces of Germany are marching beyond the boundaries of German Austria. These forces, called in by the new National Socialist Vienna government, will guarantee the possibility to the Austrian people to shape its future through a true plebiscite in the shortest possible time. Behind these armed formations marches the will of the whole German nation. I myself, as leader and chancellor of the German people, may be happy to place my foot as a German and as a free citizen in that land which is also my fatherland. The world must convince itself," ends the Führer's proclamation, "that the German people of Austria are now living hours of the deepest joy. They see in their brothers who have arrived to help them the saviors in their hour of need." The proclamation ends with these significant words: "Hurrah for the Nationalist Socialist German Reich. Hurrah for German National Socialist Austria." The first official inkling of the change is impending in the Austrian setup came yesterday, when the Vienna radio laconically broadcast the following communique: "The Chancellor and leader of the Popular Front has decided to postpone the plebiscite due on Sunday. Further communications will follow." This statement implied that the Chancellor's policies that were to have received tomorrow the sanction of the Austrian nation were to say the least wavering. Confirmation of this came at 7:30, when Chancellor Schuschnigg himself stepped up to a microphone and announced his resignation. He then spoke, "Austrian women and men, this day has placed us before a grave situation. The government of the Reich, of the German Reich, has sent to our federal president an ultimatum according to which the federal president must name chancellor a man of their designation and constitute a cabinet in compliance with the proposals of the German government, otherwise German troops will enter Austria. I state before the world," went on Herr Schuschnigg, "that the news according to which riots have broken out with lots of bloodshed without the government being in a position to control the situation is false from A to Z. The federal president charges me to tell you that we are bowing before violence. As we do not intend, even in this climatic hour, to spill German blood, we have ordered our army to draw back without substantial resistance in case the invasion should take place and to await the decisions of the next few hours. Thus," ended Herr Schuschnigg, "I take leave from the Austrian people with this wish. May God protect Austria." The statements contained in Herr Schuschnigg's speech were officially denied today in Berlin. Herr Schuschnigg's pronouncement was followed a little later by an address of incoming Chancellor Seyss Inquart, who also broadcast his words over the radio. He said, "Men and women of Austria, comrades of the German people, in view of the happenings of today and of those towards which we are moving, I declare that I have made it my post and consider myself responsible for the order and tranquility of the country. I invite everyone to maintain the same order and tranquility. The events of the next few hours and discipline call for discipline. Any demonstration must be kept within reasonable bounds. I particularly appeal to the Austrian National Socialists to preserve order and induce their comrades to act in this sense. I count on them to uphold the executive power and to keep ready for any emergency. I remind you also that any resistance against an eventual advance of the German army is out of the question. I invite you to unite and help us to face a happy future. The actual appointment of Dr. Seyss Inquart to the Chancellorship did not come until 1:30 this morning, when the great windows of the balcony of the Chancellery were thrown open and a new cabinet list was read to people amongst much applause. This list included, besides Price Inquart, Dr. Horst now as Vice Chancellor, Dr. Wolf for Foreign Affairs, Dr. Huber, Goering's son-in-law, for Justice. This afternoon at 3:45, a five truckloads of German soldiers, led by a lieutenant colonel, reached the Brennero Pass on the Italo-Austrian frontier. Their commander immediately contacted the political and military local authorities. The German officer spoke in Italian to the Italian commander of the Brennero garrison, saying, "I bring to you the greetings of the German nation and the expression of German admiration for your leader." The Italian commander answered, thanking the German colonel and expressing words of sympathy for Germany and the Führer. The meeting developed along lines of cordial comradeship. After 2 hours, the German contingent left for Innsbruck, leaving behind them a non-commissioned officer with a few soldiers for police work. From London in the meanwhile, we learn that following a cabinet meeting, an official communique has been issued which says that the British government considers the action undertaken by the German government with regard to Austria cannot but reflect on Anglo-German relations and on the sense of security in Europe. The British government is maintaining close contact with the French government and is following with unabated interest the developments of the situation. Another message tells us that Czechoslovakia and Hungary have closed their frontiers with Austria. At the same time, Romania has closed her frontiers with Yugoslavia, Hungary and Czechoslovakia to stop Austrian refugee Jews from seeking harbour in Romania. Herr Hitler this evening gave an address at Linz in Upper Austria. Rome. In a leading article on the front page of Giornale Italia, Signor Virginio Gaida this evening faces squarely the latest Austrian developments under the title Germany and Austria, the Fatal Course. After tracing the past events and changes which have led up to the current move, Signor Virginio Gaida writes, "The gaze of foreigners turns to Italy, as if awaiting some extraordinary reaction. In Italy, however," Mr. Gaida states, "there can be no perturbing reaction. The Italian position is purposely clear and precise. Italy has placed no obstacle and intends to place no obstacle in the path of a natural stage of German national history." This Italian attitude of national respect, of international correctness, and of realism has been in evidence for some time. On March 1st, 1937, for instance, confronted with the surprise simulated in some foreign quarters at Italy's position in regard to the injudicious agitation for the Habsburg restoration in Austria, we wrote, "The fascist government will certainly not be the one to undervalue great historic national traditions." We excluded at that time that the Rome-Berlin axis could be split by any Austrian problem and that Italy should be eternally and exclusively nailed to the Brennero Pass. On the 18th of last February, continues Dr. Gaida, we likewise wrote, "Italy observes a policy of respect for the national rights of all peoples and also for the current historical realities. It would be more than folly, it would be cruel, to try and spur 7 million Austrians against 66 million Germans, and especially on a question which is based on national unity." At that time, we likewise, continues Mr. Gaida, gave a lie to all the fabulous news circulated in this regard, and we stated that Chancellor Schuschnigg had never, on the question of his relations with Germany, asked for anything from Italy, and had limited himself to informing the Italian government of the agreement reached. Signor Gaida concludes, "This notable chapter of European history must be considered in the light of historic fatalities. A spirit of calm reflection must replace that other spirit, already so abundantly displayed elsewhere, of sterile polemics and useless protests."